Welcome to the Earn More, Stress Less podcast with me, Caro Sison. This podcast is for self-employed business owners just like you, who really want to grow their business and become successful and profitable, but without all the stress and hassle. I want to share my 30 years of business experience to show you how simple it can be to earn more money and how you can get organized without needing a business degree or any other qualifications. I'll be talking about the easy steps that you can put in place right now to start earning more money today and to help you get the business that you deserve and dream of. Without further ado, let's get started. This week's podcast is sponsored by Pocket PA, helping self-employed business owners to get organized, understand their finances, and do their accounts all in one place using a powerful online tool. If you're serious about making a profit and having a successful business, then using a simple digital web app like Pocket PA is the best way to grow and scale your business. Visit pocketpa.com for more details and start managing your money like a pro today. Hello and a big welcome to the Earn More, Stress Less podcast with me, Caro Sison. Thank you for joining me. Today, my guest is Amanda Hutchinson, and she is the face behind the camera at AKP Branding Stories. And her company specializes in branding photography for both entrepreneurs and creative business owners. So, Amanda, hello. Welcome to this week's podcast.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Pleasure. So, for you, photography is all about storytelling, hence the name. And I know that that's at the heart of every single image that you take and create. And I totally get that a picture has the ability to really tell the story, part of the story behind that image. So, could you just tell us a little bit about what brought you to your photography business and how you started and perhaps your squiggly line into becoming self-employed?
Yeah, and it is a very squiggly line. So photography was a creative outlet to start with for my quite depressing day job. So my background is in crisis management and emergency planning. So my job was to think of what is the worst possible thing that could happen and then put a plan in place. And for the first 5 years of leaving uni, I also then had to respond to those things. So I started working the week Baby P hit the news, and I left 6 months after Tottenham riots, and I was on call for a whole manner of things during that time. So it started with wedding photography.
Sorry, I just have to stop you there. I didn't even know that what you've just explained was even a job. Crisis management. That, did you do that as a degree or something at uni?
My master's is in disaster management and my degree is in psychology. And I realized I wasn't sympathetic enough to be a counsellor or go into the therapeutic side of psychology. And I had a strange interest into why terrorist events happen. And so I did disaster management after doing some volunteer work.
That's incredible. I didn't even know these sorts of things existed. So I think I need you on speed dial to manage crises because you sound like just the girl.
Yeah, well, every local authority has to have one of those positions in...
Who knew?
Yeah. And it can be anything from bus, water mains, fires. You know, the least glamorous part of it was doing the 5 a.m. grit report to local government as to how much grit there was left in the borough during the snow. So, yeah, it wasn't glamorous.
And so you were looking for an outlet to do something else. I can hardly believe it.
Yeah, I needed something happy and creative. It was photography, and then we got married and I didn't want to leave the wedding industry, so I joined the wedding industry as a photographer, but I actually then started taking photos of the suppliers at weddings, setting up, doing their thing kind of behind the scenes, and sending it to them, because for me it was all part of the story of the wedding and what goes into a wedding. But what I found was that actually suppliers weren't really ever given these photos. They weren't ever really taken at weddings. And so I was providing brand images without even realizing at the time, because 9 years ago, it wasn't really a big thing in the UK. And I started realizing I actually enjoyed telling the stories of other businesses, maybe even a bit more than weddings at that point. And so I set up the branding side of the business, and I've now closed down the wedding side, and it's 100% 100% brands. But I left the corporate world in 2019, because I went into a consulting role, I got fed up being on call all the time. So I went and worked with lots of global businesses to put plans in place and train their management teams on what to do. Left in 2019, having spent years working with companies going, what are you going to do if there's a pandemic? What are you going to do if your staff all have to work from home? And then lo and behold, in 2020, all of those plans had to be enacted. And I sat at home as an out of work photographer thinking, God, I'm glad I'm not in that anymore.
You didn't feel tempted to go back in and sort of up your prices and start making a killing on managing the whole disaster that was unfolding in government?
Oh, God, no, I just wouldn't have, like, I wouldn't have got any sleep. Like, I just thought, no, I'm going to go through IVF instead. And we got our little Jack out of the back of it. And I was like,
oh, a lovely story. And so was photography a sort of a side hustle? Was it just a hobby or an interest, or what, you know, because that's quite a big change from being in disaster management to suddenly being a wedding photographer. So how did you join up those dots to move from that corporate world into having your own business in photography?
So it was a hobby to start with. And then in 2013 was when we got married, and I thought, actually, I really want to do this. So I then trained and shadowed another wedding photographer for a year. And then, yeah, from 2014 to 2019, I had the business as a side hustle. I think working in risk management, I knew I couldn't just take a blind leap of faith. I did hand my notice in earlier than I was going to, but I just couldn't deal with the office politics, and there was things going on that I just didn't want to be part of, and it was a little bit kind of out of anger and frustration, and I just threw my hands up and went, sod it, I can't do this anymore. The business is at a point where I know it can replace my salary, not knowing there was a pandemic on the horizon, and so I just did it. And I think people at work thought I was either mad or brave,
or a combination of the two,
very much. And I think you have to be a little bit to just take that leap, especially if you have got a very secure and, you know, good salary. It is hard to take that leap, but I was in the headspace of life is just too short to do something that you don't enjoy. And whilst I still enjoyed the client work and being on site, I hated the office environment, I hated the politics and the management, and I couldn't do it anymore.
And I think there comes a point where you have to sort of think, well, there is going to be some element of a risk, but it's a calculated risk, particularly if you had been running your side hustle, your hobby business alongside your main income producing employed role. And so I think that that's a really nice way to jump into self-employment when you've been able to build up some confidence, perhaps a little bit of a reserve, and a clientele where you know that you're not just starting from a standing start. So you have got some income, you've got some experience, you've kind of put your toe in the water for a little bit longer than just a few weeks or a few months, and you've really got that knowledge that you could actually make it. And then there becomes that point where you just think, gosh, the risks are far less than than I want to have staying in my employed role, and it's time to make that pivot and say goodbye to employment and start being free, and free as a bird, and having your own destiny, I suppose. But I understand for a lot of people that it can be really anxiety laden, because it's a completely different environment where you are literally just solo if you're self-employed in your own entity. Do you remember when you actually sort of woke up for that first morning after handing your notice in and thinking, gosh, that's it now, I don't have an income coming in steadily at the end of next month, there won't be a paycheck?
Yeah, so it was funny, because I handed my notice in and then I had to go straight away for work for a couple of days. So I woke up the next morning in a Premier Inn and went, oh crap, what have I done? And I rang my husband and went, what have I done? And he said, actually, kind of, especially because I was still shooting weddings at that point, he was like, in reality, your income is more protected being a wedding photographer and people booking you 18 months out than you are being in the corporate world, where every year they're assessing on performance and they're making cuts if we've not hit target. And so it kind of talked me off that ledge of going, maybe I just need to ring my boss back and tell him that I've made a terrible mistake. And then I had a 3-month notice period My God, did they work me till like 6 p.m. on that last day, because I wasn't going to a competitor, so I couldn't go on
no gardening leave.
No. And so they worked me, like they got everything they could out of me, partly because there wasn't really a contingency for me leaving. It was probably just taken for granted that I'd been there for 7 years and I was happy. And yeah.
So did you have a handful of clients when you got started and you became fully self-employed? Did you have that client base, or did you have to start marketing, you know, to really go out there and get going to find new clients to start bringing in new business?
I already had quite a loyal client base at that point on the branding side. I'd been using my annual leave and weekends and evenings to do shoots. So I'd got to the point where I was having to turn people away because I had work. I had my employed role. So as soon as I had an end date, I was able to say, right, from the, you know, from the 13th of June, I will be free. And my diary was booking out 2-3 months in advance, fully booked right the way up until we went into lockdown. Even as we went into lockdown, I had 3 months worth of shoots that then had to go on hold until we came out of it. So I built a pipeline so that transition wasn't as scary, and I was very quickly exceeding what my monthly take-home salary was coming into the business.
So that would have been comforting. And is it right? So you've chosen the niche of branding with your photography rather than obviously wedding photography.
Yeah.
Because with a wedding photographer, once they've had their wedding, they wouldn't necessarily be a repeat client, perhaps, unless they're coming back after another cycle. But with the branding photography, is that a client for life, or the lifetime of their business, where you will continue to have repeat business? Is that the idea by having a client base of clients for the branding aspect?
Yeah. So a lot of my clients are repeat clients. They come back every year, several times a year, depending on who it is. For some businesses, if they're not showing their face really, really regular on social media, they don't need to have regular brand shoots. We can create a sort of 6 to 12 months worth of content in a shoot. And sometimes that's all they need, because, you know, for instance, cake makers within the wedding industry are largely going to be showing the cakes that they are making. They don't need new images necessarily every single year of them still making cakes, unless they are drastically changing their appearance. Whereas the kind of online business mentors, coaches, strategists, those sorts of people who are constantly on social media and launching things and showing their face, and it's more of a personal brand, they're the ones that come to me on a more regular basis. And I get to grow with their business. Like, I've been working with some people right from when they started their business and I started mine. And, you know, sort of 6-7 years later, I'm still photographing them and I've seen their business change and adapt, and we've changed how we shoot and where we're taking the sort of levels we're taking those shoots to. So it's I love being part of that and almost kind of being part of the team.
Yes, I've seen that, and I know some of the clients that you work with, and it's just lovely because I know how, you know, you're integrated as a team member, and you know exactly how they operate, exactly where they are in their stage of the business. So because you've kind of grown up together with your businesses, it's been possible for you to sort of adapt and grow together, which I think is really nice. So just run me through what a typical day or week in the life of Amanda at AKP Branding is like. What does it involve? If somebody's thinking about becoming a branding photographer, what could a typical day look like for you?
So that's what I love. There doesn't seem to really be a typical day. I don't know whether part of that is because I have a very, very lively 2-year-old now. But I generally shoot on Tuesdays and Thursdays. I might have the odd, like this morning I was photographing a flower farm, so I throw in the odd Wednesday shoot if I can, but my shoots are based around when Jack is in nursery. I'm trying now, and I've got the freedom in my business now to not work when he's awake and around. So Mondays and Fridays, I only work on his nap times. Shoot day will always start kind of the night before with me packing my kit and getting everything together. The actual shoot planning process starts probably a couple of months before working with the client. And then for anybody who follows me on social media on a shoot day, what you'll see is you'll see me on stories going, I'm on my way to a shoot. It's a really great client. I'm going to take you behind the scenes. And then I get to the end of the shoot and I go, oh, I didn't show you anything. I haven't been on stories. Here's a selfie of me and the client. We had a great one. Because I am terrible at the social media side of things. It's not ingrained in me to show what's happening every minute of every day. And then for days where I'm not shooting, I'm either shoot planning. So today was very much about putting shoot plans and location scouting.
And what's a shoot plan for those that don't know? What would that look like, Amanda?
So when I've had my call with the client, so I get my clients to fill out a brand questionnaire, which goes through who their clients are, how they work with them, how they want to be portrayed in front of the camera, whether they've got anything launching or what they want to use the photos for. That then helps me get to know their brand a bit more and start formulating some of those ideas. I then have a call with the client to go through shoot logistics, styling, clothes, props, everything that they might possibly need for that shoot. Because being a planner by background, I'm going to put a lot of planning into my shoots. And then I put together a document which has their mood boards. It has a packing list for them so they know exactly what to put in their bag to come away. So the ones I was doing for today are for retreat shoots. So they're going to be getting on a plane. There's no way of being able to forget. You know, we can't have them forgetting anything.
So this is the outfits, the props, anything that might promote their brand that if they have a book, perhaps they want to have those in the background or any particular items that might promote their brand better. So all of those things need to be collated and put into like a shopping list. Is that right?
Yeah. And that's what I do. Basically, I give them a shopping list and go, right, you've said that you're going to launch a podcast. So you need to make sure that you're bringing your microphone, your laptop, so that we can get those photos. You're going to be launching a book, right? Bring a book that is of the same size so that I can shoot that, blank out the cover, so that then when you get your book cover artwork, you can put that in on Canva onto your shoot, you know. And so we go through everything that they are going to need for that shoot. I create some mood boards just to give a bit of a visual idea of what we can create and also why we're doing it. So we are creating this scene because it's showing what you might be up to on a weekend, and that builds the know, like, and trust factor. Or we are going to do some portraits where you're engaging with the camera because you're planning on pitching for a whole load of PR, and I know that PR, you know, for journalists, wants photos that are looking to the camera. So that document then basically takes them through everything they're going to need and what we're going to do on the day, so that when they come to the shoot, they're not nervous about what we're going to be doing because we've planned it and there's a reason for it. And I know from dealing with crises that a lack of confidence is a fear of the unknown.
That's all it is, isn't it? And how long does it take you to put together a shoot plan like that if you're preparing for somebody's photo shoot day?
Now it's probably, I'd say I probably spend a couple of hours location planning and researching. And that might be because I'm literally walking the streets of London to find the right locations, or at the moment I'm trawling Instagram hashtags, using Street View to walk down streets that I can't get to yet. And then once to put the actual document together in the mood boards, it's probably another hour or two. So I'm probably spending about half a day just on the planning on my own before we've even, like, on top of then the call that we've had and any sort of correspondence back and forward.
And I've been lucky enough to be on a shoot with you, not as being photographed, but I was the prop, and it was just so interesting.
You were a pretend client.
I was,
you?
Yes. It's funny to see my picture come up with that particular client's images. I love it because it takes me back to that day. And I remember we weren't very lucky with the weather, so we ended up having to adapt and do some indoor things more than we had. Do you regularly have to rent? I know for that photo shoot that I joined you on, you'd had to rent a particular property for the sort of backdrop and everything. But is that normal? Would that cost come in as a regular thing, or do you tend to try to do somewhere either in the client's home, or does it normally have to be staged like that somewhere?
I would say more and more people are hiring shoot houses, partly because they've got the space and the light to be able to be used for a shoot. And you can find then locations that are on brand for what you need. Like, we, you know, you might have a really lovely home, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it's on brand or that you want your real home showing all over the internet. But also, you know, and I've done it for my own shoots. So part of our business was that we're building is around cocktails. And I knew that we needed photos of us making cocktails. Now, the house that we were living in at the time had a galley kitchen, really long, thin, narrow kitchen. I loved it. We decorated it ourselves. It was, you know, a gorgeous kitchen, not ideal for taking photos in because all you'd get is a side profile of us stood in the kitchen. So we rented a place that had an island in their kitchen so that you could get those shots from the other side of it. And it is worth having that kind of indoor location because in the UK, you cannot guarantee the weather. And to some extent, you can shoot in cafes and restaurants and things like that, but it looks like you're in a cafe or a restaurant. So it's great for those kind of freedom lifestyle type images. But if you're trying to portray that you're working from home or you're doing podcasts or Zooms or client meetings, you're not going to be doing that in a busy cafe. You're going to be doing that at home. So there's a whole industry of people that have beautiful houses that just rent them out for a few hours for shoots.
That's amazing. I didn't even know that existed. But when we went to that house, it was incredible. It was just beautiful. There was no clutter. It was just, yeah, it was very Instagrammable. And I couldn't believe that it was a lady that just rented her house out for a certain number of hours per day or per week or whatever for these photo shoots. It was genius. Great passive income.
Well, exactly. I've got a friend who is renovating a house at the moment and she would love to be a shoot house. And her husband was a bit like, oh, I don't know. She said to me, how much do these shoot houses cost? And I was like, well, you know, I'm generally paying between £100 and £150 an hour. And she worked it out. If they did two of those per month, it would pay her mortgage.
And wow.
Her husband just went, yeah, that's fine. Let's just do it. That was the deciding factor.
Do you prefer to do indoors or do you also do outdoor shoots as well?
I love outdoor shoots as well. For me, it's about making sure that the location is the right location for the client. So I've done shoots on beaches, in the streets of London, in the middle of fields. I've got one in July that's in mountains. So I love doing outdoors as well. Just not if the weather's rubbish, but then I always put a backup date in the diary if it's an outdoor shoot, just in case.
Yeah, that's necessary, isn't it? And as a photographer, have you slowly built up your sort of equipment? Is there a lot of initial upfront cost to become a photographer, or can you start off relatively economically if you want to sort of dip your toe in the water to see how it might work for you as a photographer? Or do you have to invest quite a lot in your equipment and stuff?
So I started by renting my equipment. So for wedding, I was hiring kit to start with. I had a single camera and a single lens, but for weddings, you need to have a backup of everything. And there was two of us. So we were needing four bodies, about six or seven different lenses. And until I knew that the business was going to work, I didn't want to be spending £15,000-£20,000 on kit.
Gosh, that does sound a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's huge. So I built it up over the years. I started by renting. I bought most of my equipment secondhand because there's a small section of the photography world where they just want the latest. And it doesn't matter if they've just bought one, they just want the latest. And I bought my first camera, professional camera body secondhand because the guy that was selling it, and it was through a reputable site, it was through the company that I was renting from, had shot one wedding on it, and then they bought out the Mark III, and he wanted the Mark III, so he sold his Mark II, and I got it for about £800 instead of £3,000.
Wow, so there is a real bonus then, isn't it? You don't have to have all the latest gear in order to be as successful in any industry. No. And I think that is a really good lesson because sometimes people do think that they have to have the newest and the best and be the flashiest. And, you know, it is a false economy, particularly if you're starting on a shoestring budget and you're literally just getting going. So that's a really good tip.
But also that's wedding photography. If you're going into something like portraiture, be it families, branding, anything like that, you need a lot less. So I shoot now with one camera body and two lenses, and then I've got lights that I bring with me for if I'm on indoor locations. So I'm now looking, now that I've shut the wedding photography business down, of selling some of the kit that can be sold, but also looking at possibly donating some of the kit that I know won't sell, but would do somebody for starting up. There's a couple of clients I know that have got, or I've had, that have got kid, you know, teenage kids that want to go into photography, and they're really interested in doing it. And I'm just going to get in contact with them and say, you know, I've got a couple of bodies, they've been worked really hard, but they'll do you for starting.
They're solid. Yeah, they're good for going. And being self-employed, is it just everything that you thought it would be and you couldn't go back to being employed again? Do you think you'll always be self-employed, or do you sometimes sit on the fence thinking, gosh, you know, it is hard and it isn't something that I probably see long-term staying working for myself?
It's hard, but I wouldn't go back to being employed. I just don't,
because
I don't know that I'm employed. I had 5 line managers in 7 years. I think maybe I just never should have been employed.
I hear that such a lot. I think once you cross over to the other side, you become unemployable. And I certainly can't ever imagine having somebody as my boss or having to be on somebody else's timeline. It just seems unimaginable for me. I know it's not a good fit for everybody. What do you think your biggest challenges are? What are the things being self-employed that you don't particularly enjoy doing, or that you find challenging, or it's just like, oh my God, I thought I would have got over that by now, but it's still annoying having to do that.
Chasing invoices has been quite annoying the last couple of weeks. Like, it seems to be a daily thing of saying, like, your invoice,
cash flow, getting paid.
And that is a frustration. And I think partly because I don't like confrontation, but I have kind of got to the point now, having spoken to a couple of kind of business friends, that if they're not paid, then I'll have to cancel shoots. And I hate the idea of doing that. But, you know, that's probably the bit I hate the most. But
it's a bit icky, isn't it? Having to ask people to pay you for a service that you've delivered in good faith, expecting that you wouldn't have to tease the money out of them because you didn't have to be persuaded to turn up on the day at the right time. You know, you were perfectly willing to go because you had an arrangement in place, which was a business contract effectively. So why people choose not to stick to their part of the bargain and pay you in a timely way is frustrating. And I know sometimes, you know, life happens and people forget or something crops up or whatever, but when it happens again and again, I find it annoying. And, you know, as a single person business owner, when you are the everything, to have to keep doing those tasks, that can be a bit tedious.
Yeah. And I think probably the other thing I struggle with from time to time is just being able to fit everything in. And I've gone back to time blocking this week, and I had a really productive day yesterday, and, you know, I've been time blocking for the next few weeks, and I've stuck to it today. So I'm hoping that that's going to just get me back into it, because I have all of these ideas in my head and then I don't always have the time to put them in. So now that I've got more balance back in my life with having moved house and childcare all sorted, I'm hoping that that annoyance of getting to the end of the day and going, oh, I didn't finish my to-do list, will sort of minimize a little bit.
Good. And what's the highlight, would you say, for working for yourself? What's the best bits about it? What are the things that you could really champion about being your own boss?
It's the freedom to do what I want. Yes, I've got clients, but they are having their shoots on the days that I want to do shoots. You know, we're going to a friend's wedding in Canada in July, and I've got a shoot while I'm out there because a repeat client happens to be there at the same time. But it's like, I can take that time out, and I haven't had to ask anybody's permission to do it. And if I'm feeling rubbish one day, then I don't have to pull myself in front of my laptop if I don't want to. I can just rearrange things. So it's that freedom, and I don't have that Sunday afternoon feeling like, oh God, I've got work tomorrow.
That's when you know you've got a really good fit. And I think one of the things I also hear a lot is the fact that you get to choose your clients, you choose who you get to work with. And that's a real, that's an underestimated bonus, because you don't need to work or take on anyone that causes you stress, anxiety, that, you know, that you really aren't on the same vibration with. Whereas when you're in a paid role, you kind of have to suck it up and get on with it, don't you? And it's like, you still have to be polite and all the rest of it. But when you become self-employed, you get to choose the clients that you work with. And that is such a joy, because nobody wants to be sort of having to rub shoulders and earn money from people that they don't resonate with.
And that's sometimes harder at the beginning, especially if you're trying to build that business and, you know, you're focusing on the income. But you learn very quickly to listen to your gut. You know, I don't take on shoots without having had a call with someone first to make sure that we are a good fit.
Yes, checking that good fit.
Yeah, because it's just, it's not fun and it's not fair on either of you to be working in a relationship that neither of you are or one of you is not enjoying. So,
and particularly for photography, you're trying to capture that essence of bringing out the best in them. So if there's like a disconnect actually on the shoot, then, you know, you're not going to get the best out of them. They're not going to feel comfortable and being themselves and authentic to get the best shot. So I think that's, you know, that's really, really important in your business, particularly to make sure that that fit is so on point. That's so good. Oh, Amanda, thank you so much. I think we've had such an insight into what brand photography is, because I think it is very different from the sort of portraiture photography or wedding photography. So I hope that that's given our listeners, you know, a real inside track on it. And if they would like to get a hold of you and connect with you, how could they do that?
I'm AKP Branding Stories on Instagram. I'm on Facebook as well, but to be honest, I'm mainly on Instagram. I'll try and take you behind the scenes on a shoot, but I can't promise that I'll remember. I've got someone who does my reels now, and Paula comes along on some of my shoots, and she's doing the behind the scenes, because I think she's fed up of me not giving her the content of where I am. And website is also akpbrandingstories.co.uk, so you can come and find me.
Perfect. Lovely. I will put a link to those in the show notes. So that's really good. So thank you for listening today. It's been really great to have you listening to another show. I will be back in another week's time. I hope you have a wonderful week, earning the most with the least amount of stress, and we will catch up again really soon. Thanks for listening to the Earn More, Stress Less podcast with me, Caro Sison. If you've enjoyed this week's episode, then do hit subscribe so we can catch up again soon. And please kindly leave a review if you've got a moment, and share with anyone else that you think this podcast could help on their self-employed journey. If you're ready to make bigger breakthroughs in your business life and want to get way more organized and understand your finances the really simple way, then start your very own 14-day free trial today using the super powerful software tool Pocket PA that I made for my own son and daughter. Go to pocketpa.com/podcast and let's get you on the way to earning more money and stressing much less. Have a great week, whatever you're doing.